With me now is Clem Santer, and Clem, the business community will be very afay with your flags and scenarios. There are a couple that have to be very carefully watched at the moment. The red flag, we're looking at the leadership flag, and also the religious flag, but specifically around Biden, Ukraine authorizing U.S. long-range missiles into Ukraine, into Russia. Let me just pick that up again. With me now is Clem Santer, and Clem, the Biz News community is very au fait with your flag scenarios. But right now, there's a big flag when it comes to Biden. Can you unpack that for us and whether this could precipitate, in your view, World War III?
Well, it's the red flag, which covers actually three countries, Russia, China, and North Korea. But in the case of Russia, it's all about the Ukraine. And obviously, with Biden announcing that long-range American missiles can be used from American missiles can be used in Russia, does raise the possibility of a third world war. When I wrote the book Flag Watching in 2015, I actually posed this scenario when Putin had just annexed Crimea and was moving into the eastern provinces of Ukraine. And I said that, you know, Russia sees the advance of NATO eastwards as a threat, and that ultimately this could lead to a third world war. Now, you know, obviously a lot of people will say, but this is just, an extra step. But you have to remember back to 1962 when Russian missiles in Cuba were pointed at the United States. And there was a real prospect of a nuclear conflict until John Kennedy actually stepped back and reached a deal with Khrushchev. And the whole thing simmered down. So, you know, Russia is just as sensitive about American missiles as America is about Russian missiles. So, you know, that's why you have to play this scenario associated with this particular flag. And it's not that the probability is very high, because we all know about mutually assured destruction, and that, you know, any nation that launches missiles at another nation of a nuclear kind faces the prospect of its own cities being destroyed. But nevertheless, in warfare, there's always random things that happen and which ramp up the kind of intensity of that war beyond what is expected. And we are at one of those moments right now.
When you say not a high probability, what probability are you putting to a World War III scenario?
No, well, I still think that it's very low, in the kind of 10 to 20% kind of probability, and that common sense will prevail. But it's certainly higher than it was before Russia annexed Crimea and then moved in on the Ukraine. And I have to say that Russia in the last few days has really ramped up its attack on Ukrainian cities and its energy infrastructure ahead of winter. And apparently today it's just hit Odessa again, and some residential buildings in Odessa. So, you know, Russia is ramping up its aggression too. So both sides are, taking the war to a higher level. And that's why you have to watch like a scenario planner. It's just like 9/11. There was a flag that we talked about called the religious flag in a book called The Mind of a Fox, which I wrote with Chantelle Ilbury. And we actually included a letter to George Bush, and we published this book in June 2001. And we said the principal flag that he had to watch was a massive terrorist strike on a Western city. And it happened 3 months after we published the book with the bombing of the buildings in New York. And so that's the whole point of this process. It's not that you're forecasting the future, but you're raising a flag saying the risk has risen. You don't know when it's actually going to be turned into an event. It could be 3 months later, it can be a year later, but at least the probability and the risk as a result of what Biden has just said about using Ukraine using American long-range missiles in Russia, that has ramped up the probability of a very nasty outcome.
How are you expecting President-elect Trump to engage on this matter?
Well, I don't know how, he's so unpredictable, Donald Trump. I mean, he's made the statement that he'll solve the Ukrainian war within 24 hours. He is a person who gets on the phone to other leaders in a way that Joe Biden has not done so. There's been a terrible silence between Joe Biden, Xi, and the Chinese leader, and Putin. But Donald Trump is much more willing to pick up the phone and chat about life. And if you remember, in his first term, he even met Kim Jong-un on the bridge between North and South Korea, and they had a chat. So, I don't know, what Trump is going to do when he becomes president, but I'm sure one of the first things that he'll do is get on the phone to Vladimir Putin.
Additional flags that we should look at in this regard, Clem, what are you looking for in terms of those elements that will drive the scenario planning one way or the other?
Well, I have a portfolio of 11 flags that I've been doing webinars and talks around for the last couple of years and written some articles around. You can't have too many flags because that is a distraction. But probably the most prominent flag I've had over the last 2 years is the religious flag of a possible conflict in Israel as a result of the intensity of competition between Judaism and Christianity and Islam. And indeed, 3 months after I put this flag top of the list in an article in June 2023, it happened with the terrible attack by Hamas on Israel. And it is a flag that has to be watched because obviously the Middle East is incredibly important in the world at large. And I'm afraid to say at the moment, I don't see any prospect of, a long-term solution. There may be a ceasefire, but I don't know what the long-term solution is going to be. Israel is a very small country, but the kind of wreckage of Gaza in terms of human life and property, and now what is going on in Lebanon, means that it's very difficult to see a prospect of a long-term peaceful settlement at the moment. So again, it's a flag that has to be watched on a daily basis. But probably the most existential flag that I have in my list is the green flag of climate change, which has quietly been forgotten because of these two human conflicts. And yes, we've just had a COP meeting on climate change, but there you have Trump saying he thinks it's a myth and he may walk out again of the Paris Agreement. And I simply don't know where this is heading. The last kind of interchange I had with some really top climate change scientists in the world, and this was about a year ago, they talked of atmospheric rivers where you would have a much greater density of rainfall over a particular area, because not only were the clouds holding more moisture because of the increased heat, but that the upper atmosphere was getting channeled and you'd have a kind of a river channel. And you've just seen that happening in Valencia in Spain, where this had been this incredible storm. And this is going to happen more and more around the world, along with obviously very extreme droughts, because that's what climate change is doing. It's creating more extreme weather patterns more frequently. And this issue has just really sort of gone again back on the back burner because of all the kind of conflictual situations we have in the world between human beings. And so it is an existential flag, this one, because our children and our grandchildren must be allowed to grow up in a world that continues to be rich in diversity of fauna and flora.
But you mention Trump and the fact that he may pull out of the Paris Agreement yet again. I mean, this could uproot that flag, obliterate the flag in terms of a real climate flag.
Well, it'll obliterate it for 4 years, you see. And I mean, I come back to the one of the other flags, which is the leadership flag, where I once said my dad was, as a young man, was doing a perfectly reasonable job at a bank in London during the 1930s. And there was this young leader in Germany called Adolf Hitler, who changed his life completely in 1939 when he had to join the British Army. And thankfully, he survived the Second World War. And when he came out, became a stockbroker. But that's the impact that global leaders can have on your personal life in a completely different country. And the fact is that 4 years is a very long time. And that's we've now got Donald Trump back for this four-year period.
While we're on the leadership flag, there are a couple of people apparently in the inner circles within Trump's administration who are slightly concerned about Elon Musk and the fact that he thinks that he is co-president. Perhaps your insights on the leadership issue while we're at it.
Well, you know, I mean, I've only heard all the names. I don't know very much about the individuals, but obviously Trump has chosen a fairly controversial team. And for me, it is incredible that a young man from Pretoria Boys High can, you know, go to America, set up these incredible companies that he has done with Tesla and SpaceX and others, and then become a close confidant of the future president of the United States. And, you know, he's been given the job of making federal government more efficient, and we'll have to wait and see what he does in that job. But yeah, I mean, so far Trump has lived up to his brand of unpredictability with the kind of team that he's announced, which everybody is sort of now, you know, not knowing which way each of the fields in which these people are involved are going to go because of the, you know, radical nature of the person who will be in charge of that particular field.
Clem, let's talk about South Africa and South Africa in relation to the U.S. now that we have the Trump administration that will be really, well, that'll be carrying the U.S. story further and what it means for us, you know, relegated perhaps to less important status that
Let's start by talking about the global scenarios that I've been using for the last couple of years. One is called Gilded Cage, where the West retires into a cage and spends most of its life trying to stop undocumented immigrants getting into the cage, and it looks after itself. And the rest of the world is basically does its own thing, whilst the West lives inside the gilded cage. And I'm afraid to say, you know, make America great again is the kind of rhetoric that goes with the gilded cage scenario. The alternative is Friendly Planet, where, as I was talking about earlier, we tackle things like climate change. So the prospect of the next 4 years of Trump is that it's going to be tougher for South Africa because the bars of the gilded cage may extend to the point that we have almost a situation of going back to the 1930s of a protectionist economy. If you remember, it was every nation barring imports from other countries. that actually created the depression of the 30s. And there's Donald Trump talking about 20% tariffs on imports from the world and a 60% tariff on imports from China. Well, you know, that's simply not good. And we, in fact, have this incredible agreement called AGOA. We export a lot of our stuff to America, far more than we do to Russia and other member of BRICS. So for us, it's going to be a tough period, this, because, you know, we want our economy to grow. We want to create jobs.
And within that, we also need to talk to the leadership flag within the South African space, the Government of National Unity. You have mentioned previously that we need an economy that is going to cater for all of South Africa. Do you believe that we have solidified that agenda and that this is going to work out?
Well, I immediately after Cyril announced the Government of National Unity, I wrote an article called Pragnumatism, because the most important thing about GNU is that it exercises pragmatism. It gets things done. I remember when I met Nelson Mandela a month before he was released from prison in January 1990, where he just wanted to discuss the high road and low road scenarios at Victor Verster near Paarl. What really impressed me about him was that he wanted to get things done. It was his number one thing. It wasn't about visions and ideas. It was about getting things done. And that's precisely what GNU has to do now, starting from the bottom up. It's got to improve local government and then obviously the provinces and then finally the way national government gets things done. And one of the most important flags that I put in here is the entrepreneurial flag, because the only way we're going to make a real dent on our horribly high unemployment rate is to promote small business everywhere, to have support systems. I'd like the banks to get together and create a similar institution to the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh. And I know that other people have said, no, Clem, we've had VBS. We don't want another of those. That's not the case. We absolutely do need a bank where small business can go to for finance. I'd like to see the Johannesburg Stock Exchange opening up sub-stock exchanges in every city in South Africa, where people can, you know, like eBay, they can post their businesses online and see if they can get crowdfunding. I want every big company to do as much as it can with its supply chain to promote small business. Anglo, my company, Anglo American, did it well in advance of other companies around our mines, having a project which really singled out small businesses around our mines and helping them supply our mines and then other people. We really need that type of approach from big business. And then, of course, we need a lot of simplification to our bureaucracy in order for entrepreneurs to succeed. We do have an incredibly imaginative population, but we haven't got an economy that supports all those potential entrepreneurs out there. And I would love to have an economic CODESA which discusses this particular topic.
Are you encouraged by what you are hearing since the election in July?
I'm happy that BNU is still in existence, that it hasn't fallen apart as a result of bickering and ideological differences. I'm definitely I'm happy that that's happened and that Cyril has managed to hold the show together. And it's an incredible opportunity because it's not yet another ANC majority promoting socialism and things that simply don't work. You now have that opportunity with GNU to really. Reshape our economy. Our scenario team, when we did the original high road and low road scenarios, said that there were always two crossroads. The first one was the political crossroads, which we managed to resolve in the early 90s under the leadership of Nelson Mandela and F.W. de Klerk. Now we're at the economic crossroads, and it's much more difficult creating an inclusive democracy, an inclusive, economy. Doing the stuff for a political democracy could be done by a small group of politicians, but the kind of revolution needed to create a proper inclusive economy has to go from the ground up. And that's why I would like to have another economic CODESA to discuss how we can make it happen, because the two have to go hand in hand. If we don't have a performing economy, it will undermine all the political progress we've made since 1990.
Clem, you mentioned, you celebrate the fact that we haven't seen an implosion within the government of national unity, despite some of the, the fractions we've heard of within the fold. What probability have you attributed to an implosion? Is it relatively low, an implosion of the GNU?
Yeah. In fact, I have two scenarios, just like as for the global economy, which was the Gilded Cage and the Friendly Planet scenarios. The South African scenarios are people's economy, where we do genuinely create that people's economy. But the alternative is a cautionary tale where we slide towards a failed state and, worse still, become a wasteland if we have a civil war. Now, that scenario is still in play, just like when we were talking earlier of the terrible possibility of a nuclear conflict. That scenario is in play. And what probability would I give it at the moment? Well, I would be higher than the nuclear conflict. I would probably say 30 to 40%. So we've got to do everything to ensure that that scenario doesn't actually come into existence. And in order to do that, we've got to have a proper dialogue between the private sector and the government of national unity as how we can fix our infrastructure, because that is the basis for a high growth economy, but then also how we can create an economy that rewards all the small business entrepreneurs that we have in our townships and that we have in our rural areas and elsewhere. Because I'm afraid to say we still have what I would call economic apartheid in South Africa. We've got rid of political apartheid, but we haven't got rid of economic apartheid. And that's why I feel we need another economic CODESA.
Let's talk to Saudi Arabia and what is happening on that front in the global spectrum.
Yeah, well, you know, Saudi Arabia has gone up till right now pretty neutral. You know, there's been a whole new sort of dynamic in the Middle East, and it was heading in a very positive direction. But unfortunately, this dreadful conflict in Israel, Gaza, and Lebanon has meant that Saudi Arabia has suddenly started making comments which would suggest that it's absolutely shocked by what's going on in Gaza and Lebanon. I think its ruler used the word genocide. And, you know, that is a definite flag. And it's why I just hope that new leaders will emerge in Israel and amongst the Palestinians that will actually get together, like what happened in the 1990s, and say enough of this conflict and loss of human life. We're actually going to find a model that we can all live peacefully together with. But as I said earlier on, it's certainly not on the horizon at the moment.
Clem, is there anything else in terms of those 11 flags that you refer to in your research? Is there anything else that you would like to throw forward to at this stage? I don't want to lose the opportunity of your engagement and your steer from a thought leadership scenario planning perspective before we close out the interview?
Well, the one flag I have to mention, because it's important for the markets, is the national debt flag, because since the financial crash of 2008, we've had governments offering easy money around the world to try and get life back to normal. And of course, it hasn't happened. The middle and working classes are still in a pretty rough state, particularly because of inflation recently, and the super rich have got even richer. Nevertheless, it has created enormous levels of national debt around the world, and particularly in the United States, where the national debt is now standing at $35 trillion. The GDP is around $27, $28 trillion a year. So the debt to GDP ratio is now 125%. And you've got to measure that against what people thought was a reasonable ceiling in the 1990s going into 2000, which was 60%. So the US is now more than double, what is considered a reasonable ratio. And so this poses a significant financial risk to global markets at the moment. It's talked about a little bit, but not very much. And certainly the kind of stuff coming out of Trump, yes, he wants to, make government leaner, federal government leaner, but he certainly hasn't said anything about trying to achieve a budget surplus in America. And of course, there are other countries which have even higher national debt levels. So it is an issue that should be given more attention by the markets.
Clem, thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure. Clem Sunter, scenario planner, joining us here on Biz News.
Thank you very much. And as I always say at the end of an interview, may the fox be with you.
And with you, Clem.